Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
This is WWE Superstar Roman Reigns, and you are listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley, two great members of the Kowloon crew. Mike, remember, this is Jay Stu's yard, brother.
Mike Riley, SummerSlam is officially off. If you bought tickets, you'll get an automatic refund. That's my public service announcement for the week. Don't be shocked if you hear rumblings of WWE trying to do SummerSlam in front of a smaller building. There were internet reports that a Lakeland, Florida venue had a hold from WWE on it for either Raw tapings or some sort of future show. So just be on the lookout for that. With regard to SummerSlam specifically, and you know, selfishly, this is where we do our self-promotion thing. Mm-hmm. I'm in the early stages of putting together a watch-along Zoom call. So if you're interested in this, and look, we're still working out a lot of the details, wrestlecast985@gmail.com. wrestlecast985@gmail.com. Your email address is not going into some database. It's going to me. And I just want to get a level of interest of if people would be interested in participating in a Zoom call with myself and Mike. We'll watch along the show. So I'll pump in the WWE Network through Zoom or whatever system we come up with to use. You can watch it there, and it'll be us, and we'll just be having a normal conversation. It might be one person. It might be 20 people. Not sure, but I'm wondering if there's interest. So here's the backstory, and I'm telling Mike this for the first time on the air.
Yes.
Back when we started in the early part of the pandemic and WrestleMania was canceled, I started a conversation with our digital manager and our promotions manager about doing this type of thing, a Zoom call, a Zoom watch-along. And so because of the pandemic and other things going on, it kind of got lost in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So then... Mike Felger is doing a Zoom call to benefit the Jake Kennedy Foundation. And so that's when it circled back to me. So if there's interest in doing this, there's probably going to be a sponsorship tied to this. There might be some type of on-air giveaway tied to this, or it might be three people email me and we all check you out and you're all good and you're just, and that's how we're going to do it. We're still working out the details on that, but I do want to know if people are actually interested in doing a Zoom call for SummerSlam. So wrestlecast985@gmail.com. That's the opening show announcement.
Nice. That's awesome. And, you know, that's some pretty good news. In fact, Jimmy, that's the best news I've heard all week. You know, obviously SummerSlam was officially moved out of Boston this week. It's like, damn, the hits just keep on coming. Personally, as you know, this has been the worst year of my life. This past month has been pure hell for me, and I've had a very tough couple of weeks personally and emotionally. So that was a nice lift to hear that right here, and something to look forward to for the month of August. I mean, to have listener interaction like that, I think that'd be a lot of fun. And you know what, Jimmy? Maybe just a thought. Maybe we can throw in a little segment with Joe Murray on there, too. He could throw in his odds for a particular match or something. Hey, Joe, what do you think of this one? Or I don't know. Maybe have someone throw their prediction out there to a listener. And like you said, a giveaway. We'll have some fun with that. Interaction, stuff like that, is always a great thing. And it's awesome to have such a good core of listeners. And I know James has said this before, and I definitely say it too. We don't take this for granted. So just enjoy doing this every week, and that would be awesome to watch SummerSlam with you guys.
And depending on certain companies and their rules, maybe we'll have somebody from an active roster pop on.
Oh! Boom, boom.
Again, these are details that we're trying to work out, and you know where we go. We have to make sure that people are interested, and if there's sponsorships, and da-da-da-da-da-da. But it is something in progress. It is something I have been working on for a while now, and you know, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, then it's just another Jay Stu idea that gets burned to the ground.
Hey, you know what? It's better to have
an idea. Or stolen by somebody else, because people like stealing my ideas, Mike Riley. People like stealing my ideas.
Using it for
more important people.
Interesting. Okay.
As far as SummerSlam, the actual show goes, it looks like in pencil, it's Randy Orton versus Drew McIntyre, Braun Strowman versus The Fiend as the big title fights, and then some combination of Asuka versus Bayley, or Banks versus Asuka, or Bayley versus Bliss, or I mean, give me Banks versus Bayley, or a title for, give me a ladder match, right? Give me a double title ladder match, something like that. But that's kind of the early stages of SummerSlam, which we'll focus on more as we get closer and SummerSlam becomes more official. But I think that's the pencil direction that they're going in. I want to focus on two things to start off. I know, Mike, you've got some thoughts that will hopefully I will transition to those properly. But I've kind of got the ass about a couple things. One is not necessarily the ass, but Big E as a single. It looks like we've started the process of that, and that's very exciting. As on SmackDown, Kofi Kingston announced that he's going to be out for a little while and told Big E, this is your opportunity.
Hey, bro, what's the news?
Well, I mean, not the best news. They said I'm going to be out for at least 6 weeks, maybe more, you know, but I get to spend some time with the family, you know what I mean? So it's all good.
Hey, damn it. I'm sorry, man. Hey, take your time. Heal up. I promise you when the time is right, Shin and Cesaro, those titles, I promise you we're coming. Take your time, though, but we're coming.
I appreciate you, man. We appreciate you. We'll get the titles back when the time is right. But I feel like the universe is trying to speak to us right now, man. I mean, let's think about it. Woods is out. I'm about to be out. That means right now is your time.
I mean, I hear you and all. I appreciate that, but
Look, me and Woods, we talk about this all the time. I mean, for the past 6 years, you have been completely selfless. You've been putting the group ahead of yourself, you know, week in, week out. Even when I was the WWE champion, man, it was always love all the time. No jealousy, no animosity.
Never, man.
You know, I always appreciated that. And honestly, I couldn't have done it without you. But here and now, it's about you, man. It's about you showing the world what Big E can do.
Like I said, I hear you. I appreciate that. But it's you and
E, we want this for you, man. Don't let them deny you for a decade before you take your due. More importantly, you've earned this. You deserve this. And you have our blessing, man.
You sure?
Now put your meat on my meat, man. Gently now.
You good? I'll take my time.
Please, gently.
Hey,
I'm delicate.
Hey, I love you, man.
I love
you,
man.
I appreciate it.
Come on, man.
Hey, thank you, man. Sincerely, thank you.
I mentioned last week that Big E as a single is something that I'd love to see.
Yes, you did.
And so here's the question that I have. Would you rather have Big E against AJ Styles for the Intercontinental Championship or Big E against Braun Strowman for the Universal Championship? And is Big E somebody who is believable to beat Braun Strowman? And I say yes to that. I say that either program works for me. But we've kind of seen Big E as the United States champion. I'd like to see Big E as the main event world champion or universal champion. And by the way, if he cheats to beat Drew McIntyre or Braun Strowman, I'm all for that. Like I appreciate a good villain. Although I think Big E will be more of that fun good guy, which maybe now as a single he can put a little bit more seriousness into his work. But I think he fits the criteria of a WWE champion to a T. He's got size. He's got charisma. His interviews are good. His work is good. Everything that he's done has been, I think, a good thing. So, Mike Riley, your thoughts, Big E as a single competitor.
So last year with the whole Kofi Mania, when he had that run on his way to the WWE Championship, and when he ultimately won the championship at WrestleMania 35, I know I mentioned it a few times here on the podcast after that happened that, you know, we may see a turn with Big E. And that would have been a prime opportunity right there to have him feud for the championship with Kofi Kingston. Sure, they know each other so well, and it would have been a good story right there. So that I always have that in the back of my mind. The fact that he is going to have that opportunity right here, yes, he was a little reluctant to it on the, you know, the screen side of things, but then he did accept it. What Kofi said, now is your opportunity. It makes me believe more now to what you were saying, going as the heel, if he were to do that to screw over Braun Strowman or Drew McIntyre, yes. But I think you're looking more right now for him to go up against AJ Styles and the Intercontinental level, the Intercontinental Championship for now, to at least start. And I'm okay with that. Now, would I like to see him become Universal Champion or WWE Champion? Sure. But I think you cannot ask for a better opportunity to begin a singles competition run. Yeah, the Intercontinental title is a great stepping stone to that top-tier championship, but you're also working with, I think, the best current wrestler on the modern roster, on the roster right now, AJ Styles, your best talent. So that's a win-win situation right there for Big E, and I have no issue with him starting for the Intercontinental Championship. And you know what, James? I hope he wins the Intercontinental title at SummerSlam over AJ Styles. That would be a big push for him in the right direction.
So just thinking out loud.
Yep.
He can do both. And what I mean by that is he can get into a program with AJ Styles.
Mm-hmm.
He cannot win the Intercontinental title, but he can come so close to winning, and he doesn't. And it builds that anticipation so that by the time we get to January,
yep,
and maybe we have fans, maybe we don't, the Royal Rumble, Big E wins the Royal Rumble, and then he goes on and he's in a championship fight, if not headlining WrestleMania.
Okay.
And that's the long play story that they do. And maybe it's against The Fiend, maybe it's against Strowman, maybe it's against somebody who's not even thought of right now. Mm-hmm. But maybe, and we'll talk about the Adam Cole, Pat McAfee situation a little bit, but who would you rather have win the Royal Rumble, Adam Cole or Big E?
I think Big E's a better story on that, if you're going to have in that situation. However, though, Adam Cole, the only other way you can work that, if Big E is to become Intercontinental Champion, then I think it's a better story to have Adam Cole get that run and get that chase to have his moment at WrestleMania. But that's also a very big spot for him right there, right away. I mean, you're 6 months away from the Royal Rumble, or seven or eight, I guess. And, you know, then here he is right at WrestleMania. Are you ready to put him in the WrestleMania main event, Adam Cole?
Well, I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, he's got the talent to be there. He just doesn't have the size to be there.
Yes.
But I think right now, as we're doing this in July, the summer before the Rumble, mm-hmm, we're a long way away from the Rumble. But your three favorites to win the Rumble are Edge, Adam Cole, and Big E.
Yep.
Unless I'm leaving somebody Edge out who's just, yeah, Edge.
Really?
So there were reports because of Edge. So Edge's injury.
Yeah.
So it was supposed to be, I'll back up. Reportedly, it was supposed to be Edge and Randy Orton for SummerSlam. Edge gets hurt on a retake of their match, And he's pushed back. He's not going to be available until at the earliest Survivor Series, maybe December.
It's going to be a while.
I assume it's the Rumble, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea is Randy Orton is going to beat Drew McIntyre at SummerSlam, win the title, and have this long run as champion until Edge comes back. And then Edge wins the Rumble, and your WWE Championship main event at WrestleMania 37 is Randy Orton versus Edge. Maybe an I Quit match, maybe, you know, some sort of whatever match. And Edge wins the Rumble and wins the title at WrestleMania 37.
Okay.
Which I can't wait for the internet to be angry about, because here's the part-time wrestler becoming WWE. We like Edge, so we don't rip him. We only rip the part-time wrestlers who we don't like when they become champion and then they hoard the belt.
Yeah, well, i.e. Brock Lesnar and a lot of people too, at Goldberg too, for that matter. A lot of people not on the Goldberg train. But Edge, though, I don't know about, again, that, there you go, the part-time wrestler thing. I'd have a problem with that. I would have an issue with him.
I can't wait to hear your commentary on how bad an idea it is. I can't wait to hear that.
I don't think it's a bad, I mean, you know, he had a great Royal Rumble this past year. It was a great surprise. It was awesome. But I think the ship has sailed for Edge to become champion again. And that WrestleMania moment, like, he's more of an attraction than a main event, in my opinion. You know,
Brock Lesnar is an attraction as well, but sticking with Edge.
Yeah, but he's also been a champion recently. Edge hasn't in 10 years.
And he shouldn't be.
There you go. Boom.
He shouldn't be. So
I
will look forward to your commentary of ripping Edge when he becomes the WWE champion after WrestleMania.
Oh, we'll see about that.
All right. Speaking of Edge, him and Daniel Bryan are reportedly contributing to Raw and SmackDown's creative teams. Both wrestlers are said to have influence over their storylines of their stuff and other stuff. And so these are two really good minds contributing to the creative process.
I think so too.
Here's my question, Mike Riley.
Mm-hmm.
When do we hold WWE talent accountable for getting over themselves when creative might be terrible? So, as Bruce Pritchard always said, this is what I have the ass about, right?
Yeah,
it's never the talent's fault. It's always the creative fault, right? So, Bruce Pritchard has this wonderful saying. He says, it's live TV, so if you can do better and can handle the ass chewing, go for it. Triple H used to do it, and then The Rock caught up. Now, remember The Rock started out with being a third-generation superstar who was wrestling in tribute to his legacy. He was Rocky Maivia. So mm-hmm. November 96, he debuts. February 97, he's the Intercontinental Champion in Lowell, Massachusetts.
Yep.
Before the summer is over, Rocky Maivia is hurt. He's being booed. People are chanting, die, Rocky, die. And he's losing the Intercontinental Championship. So then The Rock comes back. And depending on who you talk to, it's some combination of Jim Ross or Bruce or The Rock himself coming up with this idea of speaking in the third person. And what happens? He becomes a bad guy and he gets over. That's his creative input, right, into his own character.
Yep.
Steve Austin gets his foot in the door as the ringmaster, a mechanic, the million-dollar champion. Ted DiBiase takes a hike for WCW for more money and a more good working. He didn't like the attitude era that was coming.
Right.
That's the interview out there. And I love Ted DiBiase, former WWF champion Ted DiBiase, which is now recognized, but I've gone on that rant before.
Yep.
So Steve Austin gets rid of Ted DiBiase. He gets a microphone and he gets to speak for himself for the first time. And lo and behold, he can talk, Mike. He can cut promos. And Austin 316 is born on a whim because he's given a microphone and he's given the chance to roll. John Cena debuts as the prototype. And in his own words, he says it's a fail. And Vince almost fired him. But he's given the chance to rap on TV and we're off to the races, right?
Yep.
So Bruce Pritchard, Pat Patterson, and Vince McMahon all pulled the Red Rooster out of the box of gimmicks for Terry Taylor. Mm-hmm. And what did Terry Taylor do? He didn't embrace it. And what is he most remembered for? Being the Red Rooster. But he didn't embrace it, so he hated it and he was miserable. For crying out loud, Dusty Rhodes got polka dots over. Five random dudes from Ohio Valley Wrestling get called up and they're mailed cheerleaders. and they got to main event spots, doing the best that they could for the gimmick. And Dolph Ziggler is still in main events because he did what was right. He took the opportunity to turn it into himself. The most prime example is Daniel Bryan, also on the creative team. Daniel Bryan was an independent wrestling darling, one of the premier in-ring performers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he was constantly shamed on TV for it. Michael Cole made fun of him. Michael Cole, who doesn't even use his real name, uses Michael Cole as a gimmick name. Syracuse a-hole, right?
Oh, yeah.
He and Michael Cole, when he's not being produced, is actually a good play-by-play wrestler. So don't.
Yeah.
It's Vince's.
Yeah.
He, Daniel Bryan created this over-the-top celebration for cashing in his contract on Mark Henry, mm-hmm. which was the origin of the Yes movement and then the No movement, to the point where he gets to WrestleMania 28 in Miami as the world champion, and the fans, who are smart at WrestleMania, they're behind him because they don't want Sheamus. Like, nobody wanted Sheamus except Vince. Daniel Bryan gets beaten 18 seconds to open up WrestleMania by Sheamus. Took the summer in rematches, worked his tail off. There's a 2 out of 3 fall rematch with Sheamus that is off the charts great. You should go back and watch it. It's on my match of the week.
Yep.
Gets in a tag team with Kane. They win the tag titles in Boston at Night of Champions, Clash of Champions. Mm-hmm. It's the one where they did the Cena CM Punk double pin. It's a good show. He took all those bits in psychology, mental health, friendship groups, whatever, turned them into gold. And then John Cena pushes for him to be in the main event. Daniel Bryan wins the title from John Cena in one of the great SummerSlam main events of all time. And then WWE plays off their true failings of Daniel Bryan. He's undersized. He's this, he's that. And they just F with him for the next however many months. So now you get to the Royal Rumble. And Big Dave Batista wins the Rumble because this is going to be the greatest match of all time. It's Batista and Randy Orton, and it's this and that. CM Punk takes the powder. Walks out, upset, hurt, whatever. And now the fans are revolting against Randy Orton and Dave Batista. So now Daniel Bryan, who has this Yes movement,
mm-hmm.
forces their hand, and he gets their moment. And what Daniel Bryan did was he took their TV time and did what he could do within their system and got over, and he got his WrestleMania moment. Yep. So That's a long way of saying, and there are other examples. Look at the difference between Asuka now and Asuka at WrestleMania 34. Look at a character like Nick Densmore, Eugene.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best in-ring workers in Ohio Valley wrestler, called up to the main roster, given a terrible gimmick, did the best that he could with it. So essentially, this is a long way of saying, do the best that you can with what's given to you as a performer, as a wrestler. And then when you have a chance to use your own stuff, that's when you jump on that opportunity. Jump on the opportunity. AEW takes input from the entire roster. And Tony Khan spoke publicly about Chris Jericho telling the roster on a Zoom conference to submit ideas. That is what's going to be successful for the WWE if they turn it around, is they take more input from their performers. And it's not just Vince saying, this is what you're doing. You're going to do a gas mask gimmick. Dean Ambrose.
Oh God.
You know, just as an example.
Yeah.
You're not going to do the ring master. You're not going to do this. We're going to have conversations about your visions for talent. Because if you go to the Attitude Era, what was the most successful is Vince communicating hands-on with his talent.
Right. Right.
So that's you know, 7 minutes of your life you're never getting back.
That's a great rant. And you know what? It's good for Edge and Daniel Bryan to be part of the behind-the-scenes crew now for Raw. I mean, we haven't seen Daniel Bryan on TV since late May. Edge, of course, right?
Well, since he lost the Intercontinental Championship finals to AJ Styles.
Yeah, so there you go. May 25th, 26th, right around that time there. And here we are with Edge, you know, again, nursing that injury, as we just discussed a few moments ago. But yeah, it sounds like Edge had a lot of say too, for his comeback there with Randy Orton in June. And, that was the big thing with that greatest wrestling match ever, which actually was not bad as,
and that's an example of being given horse crap and then turning it into horse salad.
Absolutely. So, you know,
June 8th is the last time Daniel Bryan wrestled.
Oh, against AJ Styles. Okay, my bad. All right. But right there, though, we haven't seen him in that amount of time right there. So here we are. Good opportunity for these guys. They're both very creative, and hopefully they use that. The WWE uses those two strong-minded and talented creative minds to their advantage. Hope it works. Hope it works. But to what you said there, you're right. Terry Taylor did nothing with the Red Rooster. So much other talent, they don't run with it. But when they are given an opportunity, it works. I mean, Dusty Rhodes, yeah, the son of a plumber. You know, and he had Sapphire by his side. That worked, I guess, for him. I mean, it was a, yeah, I mean, you're handed a crap hand, but it works. And like, even Mick Foley has talked about it before. He gets a brown suit. Does he want to wear
Mankind the Mutilator?
Yes, in brown. And he's like, oh, gross. But it worked. I mean, the mask is still a popular thing now, and he got it. I mean, The Undertaker, you listen to his stories there. Vince McMahon calls him up. This is The Undertaker. And Undertaker ran with it. And it worked. I mean, obviously for 30 plus years. And that's fantastic. So if you're given it, run with it. If it doesn't stick, then you just, it is what it is, right?
So I know you had some thoughts on Keith Lee.
Yes. So I got to tell you this, Jimmy. I saw that, you know, he did give up the North American title this week. And it really, you know, here's the thing with Keith Lee. Let me just say this. I believe in this guy. I've been a big fan of his for a while, and I'm so happy he is the new NXT champion. I'll get to Keith Lee in just a moment here, but I do just want to talk real briefly on the North American title, where they have made this title feel like it's the most important title in all of WWE. Because you're actually having triple threat matches for this championship. I feel like it's more important than the WWE championship. I feel like it's more important than the Universal Championship. I feel like it's more because you actually earn it. Now, not taking away the guys that have earned the Universal and the WWE championship, and yes, the Intercontinental title, that tournament as well. But this one here, this is a serious chase for the North American title. And as a fan, from what I'm saying, it makes me feel like that they are making this one as important as the top tier ones, where they want you to think that they're the most important ones. So North American title, I think they're telling you it's a big deal to win this thing. Triple threat matches, huge deal. NXT, they're pushing the talent here.
You're so wrong.
No, well, why? What's the best one? The women's one? The women's tag team titles? Come on.
The most important title in WWE is the Intercontinental Championship.
Okay.
And that's because they took it off Sami Zayn. They put it in a tournament with some of the better wrestlers in the world, right? They put it on AJ Styles, who can work with anybody. McIntyre's fighting a guy we all love, Dolph, but he's won one match this year. When he was in the story with Seth Rollins, it was coming off of a loss at WrestleMania to Kevin Owens. Braun Strowman was in a handicap match, and now he's lost to The Fiend. And you could make the case that Asuka has the most important title in WWE. She wins it in a Money in the Bank match. She doesn't even know she has it. And Becky Lynch was the hottest performer going forward from there, previous to Asuka, right? And right, Asuka's taken on everybody. Like, Charlotte came for her and lost. The disputed finish with Sasha Banks. So there's a case to be made for Asuka. To a degree, the championships feel like props.
Yeah, but
you know, Adam Cole's NXT title, I feel like, was very important because he was taking on all challengers. You know, he beats Ciampa, he beats Velveteen Dream, he beats Gargano.
My point is, though, maybe it's me reading into this so much, Jimmy, where I'm not as invested as I am on the Raw brand or SmackDown for that matter. And it's just this whole pandemic, as I talked about last week with the Extreme Rule Horror Show and seeing the live tweets come in and people furious over that yes, the product is down. There are a lot of people that are still upset at the way WWE is handling their product right now. And for what NXT has decided to do here, trying to tackle a situation where I got very excited on Wednesday when I saw Stephen Regal's tweet that he was, William Regal's tweet that he was going to make the big announcement. And I'm like, okay, I'm in. I'm all in on this. Then he says, we're going to have a series of matches for the NXT North American title after Keith Lee relinquished it. And I just got really excited for that situation right there. They're doing the best they can, and I think that was a step in the right direction for them to tell us how important this title is for someone to actually earn it. And for Keith Lee, when he is the current champion, and before last week was the NXT North American champion as well, it's so important for NXT to have not put him in a match next week or even at TakeOver where he's defending it and then loses it because they don't want him to take the pin. Similar to Charlotte at WrestleMania 35 in the triple threat match where she did not take the pin. It was Becky who had Ronda Rousey submit. And I don't think they want to decrease Keith Lee's value. That's how important he is to NXT right now to carry that torch as the NXT champion and for them to build up this North American title too.
But I guess I'd rather, like, rather than Bronson Reed, right, mm-hmm. who is new to NXT, right, rather than having him beat Gargano and Roderick Strong on a random episode of NXT, I'd rather have Johnny Gargano and Roddy Strong in there for the North American title.
So you don't like the you don't have a bunch of guys thrown on.
I'd rather have those three in the actual match. Because that adds more importance. If you're going to put Bronson Reed, Dijakovic, Oney Larkin, people who aren't established at like the, you need some sort of balance of. So if it's going to be a 6-way match, and I think it's going to be a 5-way match,
ladder match.
You need,
right?
Say 3 established guys and 3 up and comers. So if you're telling me it's Ciampa, Gargano, Adam Cole, and then Bronson Reed, Dominik Dijakovic, I still hate saying Dijakovic, and Killer Cross.
Yep.
That's fine. I can handle that because you've got 3 new guys, 3 established guys. I don't like them loading up a match with and I don't know how it's going to play out, but Bronson Reed's your first competitor out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
So your next 4, 2 of which are not going to be Roderick Strong or Johnny Gargano.
No.
I feel like that's a fail. And, you know, and Tommaso Ciampa's on Instagram being like, creative has nothing for me. That's trash.
Yeah.
You can't find something to do with Tommaso Ciampa. And, and knowing Ciampa as I do, he's pushing to get back on TV.
Yeah, yeah.
He's pushing to get back there. So, and his story has to be different than Chasing Goldie.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that goes. But my point is that I don't see the North American title as being important unless there are other people who are important challenging for it in the match that determines it.
Well, okay. So I get the point there with the people that are in it and so forth, but in the situation they're in right now where they're going head-to-head with AEW, who just won the ratings this week for the first time in 3 weeks, matter of fact.
Congratulations, Wrestling Observer Newsletter.
Yes. You know, I think they got to pull all the strings out here. And to their credit, they're doing the best they can. And what they are trying to do here to tell a good story, building up to TakeOver, I'm all in on this North American title chase. And this 5-way match, as a fan, they got me. They sold me. So I'm in on that. Bring it.
Oh, look, the NXT match will be great. You know, because they do great stuff because they can just do whatever they want. And
hey, the fact you're gonna earn it though, bring it. Love it.
It'll be fine. You bring up the ratings.
Yep.
And AEW won. Here's the interesting tidbit from that.
Yeah.
Tony Khan tweeted out in response to a Dave Meltzer tweet, which interesting, isn't it?
I saw this.
Well, Meltzer's on the payroll. Khan's been a subscriber to the Observer for, you know, 30 years, 20 years, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So Tony Khan's tweet in response to Dave Meltzer was, yes, AEW Dynamite was over a million total viewers for the final 5 minutes of the Young Bucks versus Butcher and Blade Falls Count Anywhere match from 8:55 to 9 o'clock, with over a million viewers and 500,000 in the 18 to 49 year old demographic. Thank you to all who watched. So that says to me that the Young Bucks are a draw. The chaos of a Falls Count Anywhere match is a draw. But I was having a text conversation with a couple people about like the ratings, and AEW's obsessed with telling people that their ratings are great, which cool.
Yeah. Like, congrats.
Yeah. I mean,
trophies in the mail. Trophies in the mail.
I'm going to get in trouble for saying something about ratings. So I'm not going to,
going
to do it because I want to personalize it. I shouldn't do that.
It's all good.
But I just, there's so much more to it than just TV ratings. There's digital ratings. There's merchandise sales. Like, there's more to the wrestling company than just the TV money, the advertiser money. I mean, that's an important part of the business, but there's more to it than that. There's the fan engagement and da 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 da. But I guess the Richard measuring contest just kind of bothers me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm fine doing it privately, but when it's like publicly, like, it's like, what do you, I think more people think that AEW is better than NXT right now.
Mm-hmm.
I that's just the vibe that I get.
Same.
Is that AEW is the better show than NXT because Monday, Wednesday and Friday all feel similar. Now, if they're not similar, they're very close to similar. And I have this theory anyway that people loved NXT so much because it was an hour on the network that they could watch at their leisure. And I feel like most people weren't really watching it, mm-hmm. but these takeover shows were so good that people were like, oh, yeah, those network specials, those are fabulous. I'm going to tune into those.
Yep.
And I think the network specials became what NXT was. Because if the NXT weekly show was so great, why'd they do a title switch in Lowell, Massachusetts on a random house show night?
Yep.
And of course, I'm referring to the Finn Balor lost Samoa Joe.
Yep.
Why wouldn't you do that on the network? Right. Why wouldn't you do that on a special?
Yeah, April of 2016. I get that, and I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. And why wouldn't you do that on a special? Like, you know how they've done the Starcades, right? And they brought that thing. They had that Smackville thing as well. Why wouldn't you take advantage of something like that? So that doesn't. I don't know. Doesn't make sense. And then here he is after that. Finn Balor is off to the main roster. He became, what was he, the second overall pick or for Raw or number one overall pick Monday Night Raw, right?
I think he was the fifth pick. He debuted on his birthday and beat Seth Roman Reigns.
Yeah. Then he becomes the Universal Champion right after that.
That's Roman Reigns, and then at SummerSlam wins the Universal title over Seth Rollins.
Yeah. Big push.
And that hurts his shoulder, and that's the end for Finn Balor, unfortunately.
Right. Right. But everyone,
I guess my point is that, and I know why they went to Wednesday nights, and I know why they're on USA is because USA Network offered them $30 million or $50 million or some stupid mm-hmm. amount of money to do a TV show, which I don't think they wanted to do. I think they wanted to keep their show on the network, do 1 hour a week and do these takeover specials because that's what the buzz and the whole theory being less is more. And the reason why I don't know too many people who watch AEW Dark on YouTube.
No,
I don't know too many people who are excited for the soon to be new AEW show on TNT. I think people who like AEW just like that it's 2 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
You get premier matchups, you get consistent fluidity among stories. And you don't have your intelligence insulted. You understand that there's a reason why Jake Roberts is wearing a face covering.
Yep.
There's a reason why, you know, they're telling you, AEW is telling you X, Y, and Z. Like, it's not just, you know, Apollo Crews, we still don't know why he's out. Like, he got jumped in the back by Bobby Lashley. No, like, the rumor is he tested positive for COVID, right? That's in the dirt sheets, right?
Right.
Which that's a whole nother thing that bothers me. Like, I shouldn't say we. There was I wouldn't say Kayla Braxton's name back on March 17th.
No.
Because I didn't feel like it was appropriate.
Exactly. Right?
And I didn't even tell you off the record who it was.
Nope.
Because I didn't want to violate the trust of the person who told me that. And as it turned out, when the note on the WWE app, they have an internal application where wrestlers log in, they get their emails and their photos and all this other stuff. It was the Sunday of WrestleMania where everybody found out that Kayla Braxton was the person infected. It didn't hit the newsletters that somebody had been infected until the next Saturday. And even then they didn't give out the name.
Right, exactly.
So now what? Because we're so many months past this that we can just assume that people have COVID and that's the reason that they're out. Like, we assume that 30 or 40 wrestlers who aren't performing because they have COVID, they must have tested positive. Like, we need to be better. Mm-hmm. And it's fair to ask the question, but to report it, let that person who has the health issue report it. Don't just assume that it's now free enterprise, free will, because it's not. It's not a knee injury. It's not a shoulder injury. It's a virus that has killed a lot of people. There are a lot of cases. Our society is completely different because of this virus, whether it's overhyped by the media or it's not. It has affected people, and there's still a degree of privacy that everybody should be respected. And there's my soapbox for that.
That I like it. Good. And there's no need to, you know, have a fine line here. You can't have one direction and then another direction. You got to have a fine line one way or another. It's going to be right down the middle. No time for BS on this. And, you know, there were a lot of other, look at the Kayla Braxton right around that time there in March. And yes, nobody knew about it until a month later and other names being thrown around. And now they're not afraid to, I mean, Renee Young, another one. You found out about her right away, right?
Well, because she came out and she said it.
But I bet you Kayla Braxton was told not to say anything. And did she?
Well,
yeah.
She didn't say anything on the record.
I know, but still, she didn't go out on Twitter saying it. So,
she did the second time.
I know that.
And she got crap for it. And she got crap from people who followed her on social media, which is wrong, by the way. Like, whether she was out on a boat partying with people in not the best situation or not, that's a life decision, right?
That's her choice.
That's her choice, and she chose to share it, and now she's not going to share anything.
Yeah, because which sucks.
Because people on social media are the worst. And by the way, I've had moments of that too, where I'm terrible on social media, right?
Yeah, well, we all are.
But you shouldn't be shaming people into the fact that they're deleting their social media. One of the best suggestions I can give people, take a day off from social media. Take two days off from social media. You'll feel better. I was talking to somebody the other day about they've taken 6 weeks off of social media.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? I'll tell you, Jimmy, I gave up 6 years ago. This was for Facebook. I gave up Facebook for Lent. It was awesome. 40 days. Never felt refreshed in my life. Thinking about doing it for Twitter next year for Lent. We'll see. It's a good free therapy session.
There's a reason why I've muted over 1,000 people on Twitter.
There you go. See? Good job. So, yes, to your point there with that, don't feel ashamed to say whatever you want about it and people and to delete tweets and so forth. That's garbage. Don't feed into the trolls.
So, speaking of trolling, I think Pat McAfee and Adam Cole are trolling us. So the backstory is Pat McAfee puts on Twitter that he DM'd Adam Cole to come and do an interview. Adam Cole does it, comes in, does the interview, and they get into an altercation.
We've watched the takeovers, Adam. The Undisputed Era is the main reason why you've succeeded. But by the way, smart. That's good business. Hey, that's business, baby. That's very smart. Well, and especially for you, because, you know, you're kind of small.
We're going to go with the size thing now.
The altercation ends with Adam Cole storming off the set, cursing out Pat McAfee. So the question is, was this real or was this not real? Was this a storyline? My first thought was, this is a storyline leading to Adam Cole versus Pat McAfee at a takeover or future event. Mm-hmm. I asked wrestler name redacted and was told that, yes, indeed, it is a work. Adam Cole is one of the nicest people in the world and would never do that. Mm-hmm. So that's the first layer of it. It's a work, and thank you. I enjoy protecting kayfabe, except when it's screaming BS in front of my face. The other thing, and Mike will know this too, is that WWE would never allow a direct message from an interviewee, an interviewer to a professional wrestler who's under contract to them to just randomly show up.
Correct.
There is so many levels of protection that the WWE has in place that you need like three different emails from three different people to make sure it's okay.
Yep.
To do anything. And this is kind of one of the reasons why, it's layered, but
it's kind of like getting a gun license.
Adam Cole, don't tempt me with the idea of bearing arms. So I'm a dangerous man.
Oh boy.
So Adam Cole would have needed permission to do the interview.
Right, right.
So, and Pat McAfee is under contract to WWE. He does some of the takeover preview shows. And so there's no way that this just happened spur of the moment. And because I can tell you as a fact, when you want to work with somebody, it works. When you want to work with somebody and the person doesn't want to work with you and you still call them an average athlete, it ends very poorly.
It's not good. Yeah. Yeah. That's the same thing, the same instinct I got too, that this is a work indeed and a future appearance for Pat McAfee here. But if you want to go into the real fanboy pants here, then you can look at it like, all right, well, you're a dick, Pat McAfee, because essentially WWE lets you talk about, you know, their company, and you are all of a sudden ripping Adam Cole here. And again, from the fan standpoint, not knowing the backstory that it is work, that you're making fun of his size. And what the hell is wrong with you? Why would you actually do that when you know Adam Cole gets ripped all the time for being a smaller than average, I guess, more
ripped in the company for being undersized. So Pat McAfee would know that.
There you go.
That would be a trigger. That would be a very easy trigger, because that's something that some of the smarter fans would know, and some of the less smarter fans would be like, ooh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I just thought that was a, from a fan standpoint, I could easily buy it without knowing all the stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how this works out. McAfee and Adam Cole down the line, and whatever works for ratings, I guess, whatever works. Ratings draw right there, right? You know?
Speaking of ratings draw, you had a thought on Chris Jericho and his utilization on AEW?
Yeah. You know, I just like, now, listen, I thought he had a really good main event this week. Very good main event with Jungle Boy. But I just think that since the title has been taken off Jericho, since he's no longer been the champion, it just doesn't seem like the real prominent Chris Jericho that we had when he was the champion. And again, love him. I think he's one of the greatest of all time and totally reinvented his career, made him a much, with the move to AEW has been much better for him. The ratings, the numbers show when Jericho is on, they go down. And sure, that was a good spot for Orange Cassidy and Jericho a few weeks ago there, but the like, does Jericho need Orange Cassidy? He needs that main event status. He needs a championship match with him. He needs to chase a championship, or he needs to be the champion to show everyone he is le champion and be the best in the company once again. I just think that it's not the best spot for him when he's not where he was before. I think he's the ratings show, and he needs to be back up at that top tier again where he is the top heel in the company.
So, Mike, I think Chris Jericho has changed his contributions. I think he is still the top. MJF is the top bad guy in AEW. But MJF isn't in the main event picture right now.
That's
so
correct.
I think what happened was Jericho drops the title to Moxley back in February when we actually had people.
Yeah.
And then because of circumstances, Jericho becomes this fabulous color commentator.
Awesome.
And Chris Jericho's contributions to those broadcasts cannot be understated because Jericho helped the entire presentation of AEW during that time when there were no fans or limited fans. So Jericho's contribution there is different. And then you fast forward, he's in the main event of the Stadium Stampede match. He's doing something with Mike Tyson. Orange Cassidy is coming off of segments where his ratings are good, and it's because that's the roster that's there, so they have to put Orange Cassidy in a spot, and he's drawing ratings. So Jericho sees that and wants to work with him, and their initial in-person debate, there's a better way of putting it, I can't think of it right now, did not do well in the rating, but that is an exception rather than a rule, because they are continuing it on. So they must have some data that tells them that that was indeed an exception. I think Jericho's contributions are just different right now.
Okay, fair.
The Zoom call that I mentioned before, where he's encouraging younger talents to get over, I think that Jericho is trying to use his top star value to get other people to that spot. He sees something in Orange Cassidy, so he's trying to help him.
Yep.
I think that's what it is. I think that's the biggest part of it.
Fair enough.
So let's see where Jericho is placed on the Labor Day card.
Yeah.
But I think he's being utilized in a different role so that Cage versus Moxley can happen and some other different things. So let's see where Jericho is placed on the next pay-per-view card. It could be too that Jericho's battling injuries,
right,
or it could be that they just like him on the desk.
He's, again,
he's awesome,
fantastic commentary. It was Bobby Heenan 2.0. it was unbelievable. Him and Schiavone together, while Jim Ross couldn't be there for the play-by-play, was excellent.
It's Tony Khan told him to stay home because of COVID.
Exactly. So it was really, really good stuff. And Jericho on commentary, that's a very skilled thing to do. And with a wrestler like that, with his caliber too, to be able to be a great in-ring performer, awesome on the microphone in the ring, and then do the commentary too, it's a real special gift he's got right there.
And you know, one of the things too, and we'll wrap up this part before we get to the Riley round and the match of the week.
Yep.
Jericho's a fan.
Yes, he is.
Taz is a fan. And those are two people who have filled in on commentary, and this is a bigger difference, I think, with WWE and AEW, is the promos are just so much more crisp and focused, and it feels like it feels authentic from the talent. When Bayley and Banks are together doing promos, it feels authentic.
Yep.
Becky Lynch felt authentic. Charlotte felt authentic when she was doing the Bratty Queen stuff.
Yep.
And Cody's promo feels authentic. MJF feels authentic. Taz feels authentic. John Moxley feels authentic. And I think that's the key with developing characters that connect with your audience.
Exactly. And it's half the battle right there. So fans, they know how they are. You can't beat it. That's a perfect equation for any particular in-ring performer right there.
You know, there was a tweet that I saw, one of my friends quote tweet, and it's essentially saying you should shame wrestlers for selling out and dressing up a certain way to get booked because they couldn't cut the mustard with their wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So for hardcore fans, like, I can watch Daniel Bryan versus Drew Gulak and enjoy it and appreciate it in front of no fans. I can do that. But not everybody can. And so the point that I was making before about Daniel Bryan is Daniel Bryan comes in as this great mat wrestler grappler, and he adapted and became a character and who did the yes movement, the no movement, the yes movement.
Yep, yep.
And that connected with the audience. And then you found out who the real Daniel Bryan was.
Exactly.
Through more stories.
Yep.
And that connected with the audience.
I think that was an even better connection than the yes-no movement. The real Daniel Bryan.
And the eco-friendly Daniel Bryan was just such good stuff because it's something that was believable. But that's that personal interaction that the character can have because you can put a cold match in the ring and they do a few high moves and the crowd reacts because they're like oohing and aahing.
Yep.
But you need that connection for a longer term. Because Steve Austin came in as this great technician, as the ringmaster.
Right.
But it wasn't until Austin 316 where it's like, ooh, we can get behind this.
Right. They bought it. Yep. And it worked. One little thing just like that. And yeah, you talked about Becky Lynch. That's the most recent one I could think of that was the greatest one since. And we'll see if that ever happens again with someone else. It'll be very interesting.
Becky Lynch was authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got an opportunity. And thank you to that Chicago crowd for Money in the Bank when she was climbing and the crowd started coming to their feet for her.
Yep.
And amazing. Then she was in a story with Charlotte. And Charlotte won the belt. And they were supposed to boo Becky and cheer Charlotte, and that Brooklyn crowd cheered Becky and booed Charlotte, and Becky was away she went.
All off the way to
a main event WrestleMania win over Ronda Rousey.
Pretty amazing. But
again, it takes time for all this stuff to happen. So,
oh, yeah.
Mike Riley, what do you got?
All right. Well, we just talked about Chris Jericho, so let's talk about this here. As Chris Jericho discussed on the Saturday Night Special about him possibly going back to the WWE. He said, quote, "It's not going to happen. I really enjoy being in AEW. Love my time at WWE. I love Vince McMahon. I learned a lot. I had a lot of fun. But listen, you can't stay in the same place forever. You become stagnant if you do, and I think you need to push yourself to do something new." So, Jimmy, yeah, I believe Jericho that he's not going back to the WWE. I think he's in AEW for the long run. But would you ever like to see Chris Jericho back in WWE? And it's a two-part question. If he is to be there, one more match, who do you want it to be against?
Chris Jericho, one more match. I'd say against Adam Cole.
Mm.
And I would say that Chris Jericho, when he gets offered to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, that's when he'd go back.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Adam Cole is my answer.
Adam Cole. Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I'd love what he and Kevin Owens did. I'd love to see one more match between those two. And it would be nice to see Kevin Owens on TV once again.
That was that match in Orlando was, quote, the worst match I've ever seen, unquote. That's Vince McMahon to Kevin Owens.
What a joke.
And by the way, Vince is so wrong. I love that match.
Yeah.
And it was 12 minutes. It shouldn't have been for the U.S. title. It should have been the main event for the Universal title, but life happens.
I got a tweet this week. Here's the second part of the Riley round. Karrion Kross, someone asked me, they said, what do you think about Karrion Kross going undefeated, kind of like building him up to the Goldberg undefeated? Would you like to see WWE do that for a character that they have kind of established as their own and with the unique entrance and so forth? Not like, you know, a very unique one like Goldberg, but would you like to see Karrion Kross go undefeated to that main event status like Goldberg and have them build up the undefeated streak like Goldberg once had?
I'm fine with it. I don't feel like I think Killer Kross is tremendous. I don't think he's going to beat Keith Lee unless Keith Lee is the transition and they're going to call Keith Lee up to Raw, which I don't think they will, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah.
Is there a character that I would like to see go undefeated? I have to give that one a little bit more thought, because you have to think of who's in a different company right now that can go into WWE and do that. And maybe the answer is Tessa Blanchard. They signed Tessa Blanchard. She goes to NXT. She builds up credibility in NXT, similar to what Asuka did, although they're two different performers. Asuka was an assassin in NXT. And she went 814 days to the point where when Charlotte did beat her, we were all like, oh, wow, like
Asuka that actually happened.
Lost.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so it was a good buildup. It, you know, everyone on their feet for it. So it's that, well, whoa, yeah, you're right, the shock value. I don't think he's going to be Keith Lee either. I mean, yes, could he go to SmackDown or Raw? Absolutely. But I think he's a little ways out. So I got Keith Lee winning against Karrion Kross at the TakeOver next month. And finally, if you could have any wrestler, past, present, deceased, whatever, current, one wrestler to cut a promo on you, who would it be?
I've already had this happen. I had Bubba Ray Dudley come on me.
Would you want him to do it again? Because we know there's a little friction there.
I would want The Rock to.
Yeah.
But considering Bubba Dudley's already done it, like, I mean, and Bubba Ray Dudley is Bully Ray, Bubba Dudley, whatever.
Yep.
Considering he's one of the great villains of all time. Like that's a good one. I mean, he walks into his final night in ECW and goes,
just leave with our
ECW men become heroes. Heroes to whom do you two think you are?
In the case of the Dudley's villain.
But in the World Wrestling Federation, heroes become legends.
The Rock is a good answer. I think MJF would be awesome because he's just so real. And then also, I'm going back, Jericho. That's like my top. So I'm going to go Chris Jericho. I think he's just perfect for everything he does, how he says it right there. They're all
MJF is a good one. MJF is a good one because in Chicago at StarCast, he was just cutting promo on people. It was I think they have there's a term called shame porn or something like that, and MJF was just shaming people.
That's awesome. Love it. Yeah, he's as real as it is outside the ring, you know, telling people how they look.
MJF just doesn't he's doing wrestling the right way.
He's awesome. Yep.
Match of the week. Matt, did you have anything else?
No, that's it. All done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Match of the week. Mine, and it's not a 4-star classic, comes to us. It's a little past the anniversary of one of the more interesting things. July 18th, 1989. It is Saturday night's main event. It is Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson winning the WWF tag team titles in a 2-out-of-3 fall match, which ended the 478-day reign of Demolition as tag team champions. I don't know if they were undefeated. I probably should have looked this up before but there's a chance that Demolition went like 3 years undefeated in WWF. You'd have to go through Pro Wrestling Database to find if that's actually true or not. But almost 500 days reign as tag team champions, and it ends at the hands of Tully and Arn. And here's the story. Is at StarCast in Chicago last year. I saw Tully and Arn, and I told them that as an 8-year-old, I booed them when they beat Axe and Smash in Worcester. And Arn Anderson, without hesitation, goes, "Good, you should have." Which, you know, laughs because Arn's like that. I had a similar conversation with Ted DiBiase at some point. It's like, "Oh yeah, good, you should have booed me." Yep. And Tully goes, "Have you ever talked to Barry Darso, who is Smash?" about the chair shot. And I go, no, but I've heard the stories. I'm good with talking to him about it.
That's awesome. So, like you said, you'll have to go through the actual encyclopedias on it to find if it was true. But according to the Bleacher Report article, 478 days, that is correct right there. That's the amount of time. And then, yes, they did lose right there to Tully and Arn Anderson there back in July of 1989 on the Saturday night's main event. So there you go. 478 days. Nice job. All right, so mine's also in that era. Well, yeah, couple of years after June of 1992, WCW, before it was Bash at the Beach, was Beach Blast. It was a non-title match as the WCW champion Sting fought Cactus Jack in a Falls Count Anywhere match. The only reason I picked this one, and it's actually a cool pay-per-view to go. I love watching the old pay-per-views, watching the how everything was, production and so forth. But Mick Foley, there's a new documentary on him on the WWE Network. Have you seen it yet, Jimmy? I know it just got released this weekend.
I have not.
Okay, I'm going to try to check it out at some point. But Cactus Jack, you know, going up against Sting, who had a huge pop coming out as a WCW champion. Jim Ross and Jesse the Body Ventura are on commentary here. They're actually sitting right by the ring, not at ringside. They're like right against the ring, the old-fashioned way. Jim Ross in a Jimmy Buffett beach shirt. Ventura's right out there. It's really cool. And they really emphasize that there are no mats, concrete floors here. It's what WCW used to have. And a couple of suplexes out there, two from the ring apron to the cement area there, the concrete floor. Cactus Jack with a great flying elbow drop from the ring apron on Sting. It took him about 6 minutes to be fighting outside as Sting had a couple of suplexes on Cactus Jack in the crowd until they finally got to the ring. Again, a good match here. Sting ended it with a clothesline off the rope onto that little entryway there and got Cactus Jack for the pin. It was Falls Count Anywhere. And again, a non-title match, but just really good to see a young Cactus Jack before we did see the Three Faces of Foley later down the line in his WWE career. And then, of course, we knew what he did in Japan and in ECW as well. And Sting, I know, James, I'll leave the Sting comments. You can do that on your own time.
I mean, that's a top five match in Sting's career.
Yeah, you're just not a... I get it.
And by the way, the other four might have Sting versus Ric Flair.
I was going to say, did you have Sting versus Triple H in the top five?
Oh, God, that was a terrible match.
I agree, but I'm just saying to, you know, the point of view and him, his matches.
Not a Sting guy. Like,
no, I get it. That's fair. I'm not like super Sting fan either, but I appreciate him kind of carrying the torch for WCW over the years.
So Sting's, off the top of my head, I would tell you that Sting's top five matches are Ric Flair, Clash of Champions 1, mm-hmm. Ric Flair, Great American Bash 90 when he wins the title.
Yep.
Cactus Jack in that match you just referenced.
Yep. I would go with the versus the Big Van Vader, Starrcade 92. Think that's gonna go in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't love that match, yeah. But okay. That was the King of Cable match. Maybe the Bash match where Sting loses the title of Vader was a little bit better, but I wouldn't even tell you that. He probably had a match with Rick Rude
probably
at some point for the US title that was good.
Yeah.
But that's
Yeah, that's fair. That's your yeah. I like the match though with him and Cactus Jack, and I think you should go back and watch it. 1992.
Unless I'm missing one where, like, Hogan at Starrcade fail. Hogan at
disaster
match fail. I don't remember well enough the cage match that was in Boston that wasn't on TV. Whether that was good or bad, I don't remember it.
That wasn't the Nitro. Wasn't he up in the ceiling?
No, Sting wins the title at Starrcade. They vacate the title and they do a Sting Hogan cage match at the TD Garden. It's a Saturday Night House show.
Oh,
they did a WCW radio broadcast of.
Oh, God.
I probably have pictures of it somewhere.
Oh, you were there for it?
Yeah, I was.
I never went to a WCW event. Never went to one.
Floor.
Never made it to one.
Yeah, it kind of hit or miss.
Yeah, yeah. Like you, I think the show you were at in Worcester on the TV side, my brother was second row at that same show. He was right in the hard camera was facing him, so he was on TV that whole time.
That was where my mom cussed out Scott Hall.
That's awesome.
It's one of my favorite stories.
Good job, Mrs. Stewart.
Yeah, good job, Mom.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's all four Sting matches. I can't come up with a fifth. So we'll
hey, whoever's... Someone will have it.
Yeah, somebody. So there's a Sting fan out there. I know there is.
Yep.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Mm-hmm. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. From Mike Riley at Sarge985 on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at I am James Stewart. The show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. You can always email the show at WrestleCast985@gmail.com. And we will close with a clip from Regis Philbin, who recently passed away. So enjoy this, and we will talk to you next week.
All right, with me now, three folks who will help make this WrestleMania one for the history books. I'm talking about the WrestleMania celebrity guest co-hosts, Regis Philbin, Marla Maples, and Alex Trebek. And let me just say, gang, it's great to have you all here in Los Angeles for WrestleMania. Regis, let's kick it off with you, pal.
Gene, it is an absolutely incredible experience for me. You know, I've had all of the guys on the show at one time, all of the WWF superstars. I've had a Hulk. Hulkamania lives, you know, the Hulk himself. I've had Macho King. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've had them all on the show, and they're the greatest. But now I'm a guest on their show, and I'm having a terrific time out there just hanging around with the guys, talking it over, except for one guy who I can't get close to.
Who is that?
Well, he scares me a little bit. Really. Earthquake. Earthquake. So big, Gene. I mean, he's awesome. The other night, they tell me, on Hollywood Boulevard, he tipped over a Pizza Hut delivery truck and ate everything inside. Now, that makes me nervous, Gene. It really does.
Regis?
Yes, Gene.
You're beautiful.
Thank you.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in, and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.